From the Hollywood Hills to your ear holes, this is True Crime Deadline.
I'm Matt Johnson, boots on the ground reporter and host of True Crime Deadline, the podcast that gives you a unique reporter's point of view from the yellow crime scene tape to the gavel in the courtroom. We paint a picture on True Crime Deadline with murder, mystery, and missing persons cases. My contacts grant you access to those case files with disturbing new details and exclusive interviews. Details might have you thinking, no, that didn't happen. They didn't do that, did they? And then there's the Oprah-inspired Where Are They Now? Binge these 30-minute Crime Bite episodes where you get your podcasts. Buckle up, investigators. You're on Deadline.
For more information about the podcast, visit truecrimedeadline.com. Until next time.
Hi, I'm Rebecca Lieb.
And I'm Jason Horton.
And we're the hosts of Ghost Town, a comedy podcast about all places abandoned, tragic, mysterious, haunted, and true crimey.
That's not a word. We cover all kinds of locations like
the Los Feliz Murder House,
an L.A. murder frozen in time, Action Park,
the world's most dangerous amusement park, JonBenet Ramsey's house, Woodstock 99, the Cecil Hotel, and the Black House.
Ooh, Satan. So pause the podcast you're currently listening to immediately and go subscribe to Ghost Town.
You can find us at Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.
Ladies and gentlemen, this podcast, truly one of the most unusual ever recorded, contains dribble, slang, and frank discussion of subject matter which under no circumstances should be heard by small children, persons with a heart condition, or anyone who is upset easily. If you are such a person, or if you're the parent of a very small child in the room, we urge you to switch off your streaming device now.
Hey, Jen.
Hey, Cam. How are you?
It's been a long time.
It has been forever.
It really has. I can't even remember how long. It's just... Life got in the way.
Life
happened.
Damn it.
Threw a couple curveballs in there.
I know. You would think that we should just be able to do what we love and not what we have to do.
Right?
I know.
Whatever.
I know. Kids wanting to go to school.
I mean, come
and
on.
Family vacation. Who wants to spend time with family?
I live with you, don't I?
I know. Come on. It's a joy to be with me every day. We don't need to go elsewhere to have joy.
I see you at your best. Why do I want to see you even worse?
Oh.
You know what I mean?
Vacation. It's not easy to go on a vacation in my family.
Nope. Well, I don't think it is with anybody else. Anybody has a perfect vacate, you let me know.
I know. But still, with going to Disneyland or Disney World, my legs are still hurting from walking so much.
Yeah, but your husband is like...
I lost 6 pounds. Granted, it's an easy 6 pounds because, you know, I'm not, as my new nickname is, Curvy Puff.
Cheesy Poof.
No, I saw that. We went to an Asian market, and that was one of the names of the snacks. Mm. Curvy Poof or Curvy Puff. And I'm like, ooh, that's a perfect nickname for me. Anyway, I've got some thank yous that I want to get out.
Thank you.
We have some new patrons that we want to say yay, yay, yay. Thank you.
Thank you, thank you, thank you.
That would be Glenn.
Hi, Glenn.
Kristen.
Hi, Kristen.
Okay, Gibby.
I know. I only got one more, so I'm going to do it.
Jane. Nope. And Lainey.
Jen is Jennifer.
Oh, Jen.
Jen. Jennifer L.
Jennifer and Lainey.
There you go.
Thank you very much, guys. We appreciate it.
We do appreciate it.
You're the best.
I have your little bag, goodie bags ready. To mail out, I just mail them out. Yeah,
it's okay.
Already.
It gets sitting. Big shout outs.
Shout out.
For reviews. For leaving us great reviews. Thank you very much to Laura, Katie, Jennifer, Jessica, Randy, Jake, Sandra. And I've got more. Marshmallow hand grenade. How great is that?
That's good.
Sacred Siren.
Ooh, that's good too. That's me.
Crime Pastor Matt Johnson.
Oh, thank you, Matt Johnson.
He's a cutie pie. Fleck Vegas. I think that's how you say it.
Makes me laugh.
Alicia Van. Amanda 240. Nana of Joy. Thank you guys
thank
for being so nice.
You don't know how happy. I know we say it every time, but it's just, we'll screenshot it, send it back and forth. And we're like, oh,
did you
God,
see this? Did you see this? It's so nice. It kind of makes your day.
It does.
You're not talking into that blank void. But anyway.
So I hear you got a good one. Well, a really terrible, awful one.
This is a horrible one, and I never
And I don't
as
know.
I say it before, I've never heard about this before until I see this.
Because we don't tell each other.
No, ever.
I just asked you who killed this person and you said, I don't know.
It's a cold case.
It's a cold case.
I do not know. I have suspects, but I'm not going to mention them for fear of lawsuits.
Right. Okay, let's go.
But anyway, let's get back to the beginning. Start at the very beginning. This is an older case.
Okay.
I'm going to go back in time. 1968 was a very tough year in the United States. It was filled with violence and uprisings and riots and just total chaos, mm-hmm. basically. In February, two black sanitation workers, Echo Cole and Robert Walker, were crushed to death inside a trash compactor in Memphis, Tennessee. This had happened before in 1964. And for years, the sanitation workers, mostly black, had been trying to organize a union. These workers were making less than $2 an hour, and the conditions were totally unsafe. So on February 12th, close to 1,400 men, black men, didn't show up for work to start mm-hmm. a strike. Mm-hmm. The ones that did go into work soon left when they realized that the other workers weren't coming in. This peaceful strike lasted 2 months and 4 days. This is when Martin Luther King gave his famous speech that I've been on the mountain, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. That happened on March 23rd. And then on April 4th, he was assassinated. And then the following week, there was this nationwide rioting, which 21,000 people were arrested, 39 people died, and 2,600 were injured. And you know this strike. You've seen it. Mm-hmm. The black men that held the big signs about equal pay and horrible. They never did.
They never got their union.
It was horrible.
I knew that Martin Luther King was connected in here. Somewhere.
Yeah. But I mean, it was absolutely shameful what they did to those poor men that worked. And that job is so hard. I wouldn't want to do it.
There's a lot of money to be made in trash. Seriously. Well,
thanks to this, they now make upwards of $80,000, I think I read. Mm-hmm. Something like that. But it's a shame that people had to lose their lives to get that. The week of February 11th was the deadliest week of the Vietnam War to the United States, thanks to the Tet Offensive. Now, this was a surprise military attack on the South Vietnamese and the U.S., and it happened on the Vietnamese New Year called Tet. The U.S. lost close to 550 soldiers, and 255 soldiers were wounded. Walter Cronkite, the most trusted man in America, went to Vietnam to see this whole carnage for himself. And when he came back, he wrote an editorial report that he's mentioned on TV, and it's commonly known as the "We Are Mired in Stalemate" speech. He gave this report on air, and it was the first time that he had ever given his actual opinion. And to quote him, "But it is increasingly clear to this reporter that the only rational way out will be to negotiate, not as victors, but it is an honorable people who lived up to their pledge to defend democracy and did the best they could." And soon after that, we started
negotiating
to get out of the war.
I remember that the clip from that.
Yeah. On January 5th, Robert F. Kennedy had just celebrated his win in the California and South Dakota primary in his bid for presidency, was killed by Sirhan Sirhan, right? Remember that at the Hollywood Hotel? Was it?
It was the Ambassador Hotel.
Ambassador Hotel.
I do believe.
Yes. And since we're a true crime podcast, we can't not mention that on December 20th, the Zodiac Killer killed his first two victims, David Arthur Faraday, who was 17, and Betty Lou Jensen, 16. Now, this is just highlights of what happened that year. There were so many other things. I mean, actually, all in all, like I said earlier, 1968 was filled with protests, riots, more, and it was considered one of the most turbulent years in history, if not the United States, pretty much everywhere.
Yeah. Turmoil.
Right. But this event that I'm going to tell you about right now, Cam, you won't find it on Wikipedia.
Really?
She's not mentioned on Wikipedia.
Really?
Lebanon, Pennsylvania is where this happened, and it's about an hour and 45 minutes west of Philly. In 1968, population was way over 28,000. And in 2018, it's close to 26,000. There was a steel mill named Bethlehem Steel, and it closed its doors in 2003. The morning of Friday, May 24, 1968, started out just like any other day. 32-year-old divorced mother of two, Mary Alice Reber, wrote a note excusing her 14-year-old daughter, Margaret, or Peggy, from school the previous day because she had been ill. Peggy also had a twin named Kathy, but Kathy was married and had recently given birth to a little girl, 14-year-old daughter.
Oh.
With twins.
And married?
Married and recently gave birth to a little girl.
And how do you get Peggy from Margaret? I've always wondered that.
I don't know.
Okay, go ahead.
Between 4:30 and 5:30 that day, Peggy set off for school, came home, and between 4:30 and 5:30 that day, mother and daughter hung out at their apartment. They lived in the Maple Leaf Apartments, which was nicknamed the Heartbreak Hotel by the tenants, and was known for housing some shady characters. Mm. A lot of divorcees, mm-hmm. a lot of go-go dancers, mm-hmm. a lot of
the wild side.
Just people that lived on the fringe of society. Let's put it that way.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And it was also said that pot parties went on there.
Not that dope.
Not pot parties. Anything but pot parties.
Reefer madness.
It's so funny to go back in time and listen. Yeah.
Yeah.
At about 5:30, Mary Alice left for the evening, and Peggy had plans with her 19-year-old boyfriend, Ray. Mm. He was coming over.
She's 14. He's 19.
Mm-hmm.
That's a gent. Nope. Okay. Mm-hmm.
When Mary Alice returned home at 3 a.m. on Sunday morning, seems she decided to go to Atlantic City with two of her male friends, she walked into her third floor apartment. She went to turn on the lights and she couldn't. There was no electricity in the house. Her landlord, who was a prominent lawyer in town, was trying to get Mary Alice to leave the apartment. He wanted to kick her out. She was late on a couple weeks' rent, and to get her out, he turned off the gas and the electric to the apartment, which was totally illegal back then.
I was just going to say, you can't do that.
Yeah. So it was totally legal. And not only was she behind in rent, it said that the lawyer landlord didn't like the fact that Mary Alice was known to have frequent male visitors.
I knew you were gonna say
at her apartment.
She's one of them wild women.
She was a wild. Well, that's right in time with the sexual revolution.
Yeah, I got no problems with it.
I mean,
I'm just saying.
To each their own.
Figured
go
that
for
was
yeah.
his problem.
Since Mary Alice couldn't see anything, there was no lights. She called out for Peggy, and Peggy didn't answer. So she went to the bedroom door, right to the door, and she called out, and she saw a suitcase where the stereo should have been, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she thought she saw something lying on the floor. And she thought, well, somebody's passed out drunk because it was kind of a party pad, right? Not one of those pot party pads, but they had visitors a lot, yeah. whether they were
more like pants party
male visitors or
no
just
pants parties.
Friends of friends. People stayed, crashed at their apartment a lot.
Mm-hmm.
She thought, well, you know, one of Peggy's friends, Blanche, or who they called Pinky, was supposed to come stay with him for a little bit. So thought maybe it was her, right? But there wasn't a lot of light, and it was only the light coming in from the window, and she couldn't really tell who it was. So she reached down to shake the person to wake them up, but something felt wrong. So she decided to go next door and get help from her neighbors. She pounded on the neighbor's door, and her neighbor, Jewel, answered the door. Mary told him that she needed help, and Jewel got her boyfriend, Walter, to come help, to go over there. They kept the door open so they could see from the light from the hall. And there, Walter saw Peggy on the floor, the little 14-year-old girl.
Mm.
He started to help Peggy, but when he touched her, he could tell that rigor mortis had already set in, and Peggy was dead. Walter immediately jumped to action, yelled for somebody to call the police, and then proceeded to find a way to get the electricity in the apartment turned on. A whole bunch of people went down to the cellar or wherever to get to jerry-rig the electricity to turn it back onto the apartment. And there, once the lights were on, they saw poor little girl's broken body laying on the floor. She was beaten so badly, a lot of the people that in the crowd that was gathered into the apartment didn't even know it was Peggy, didn't even recognize her. Peggy was nude from the waist down. Her orange dress that she had made in home ec had been pushed up. A dust mop was lying on top of her, and there was a pool of blood on the floor between her thighs. And the left side of her face was severely beaten. Jewel picked up a lavender blanket that she found in the apartment and covered up Peggy's small 115-pound body. And then they waited for the police to arrive. There are so many people out there that they wanted to give Peggy some kind of modesty in her death because so many people weren't, you know what I'm saying. In an article published in Philadelphia Weekly, Chief Detective Cliff Rowland recalled seeing Peggy, and he said, quote, "I had never, ever seen anything like it in my life. It was so horrendous. I can't even tell you about it."
It's my daughter's age. That's terrible.
This is said by a World War II veteran, and this is when he was in his 80s. Okay, before I even start this, this gets pretty graphic, so if anybody is really sensitive,
just be warned.
Be warned. At the autopsy, it was discovered that Peggy had not only been beaten, she had been strangled with a green cloth belt. The belt was so tight around her neck that it had cut into her neck, and her eyes were almost bulging out of their sockets. The coroner said that she had been choked for nearly 4 minutes, which would have caused Peggy brain damage. Mm-hmm. And Peggy had also been bitten on her left breast so hard that her nipple was almost taken off. Some said that she had bite marks on her upper torso, but
that
can't
be the upper torso, though, too.
But more, you know? Bite marks, yeah, on her upper torso. What was the most shocking was how the murder took a 5-foot recurve hunting bow, which belonged to Peggy's boyfriend, and inserted it into Peggy's rectum. The coroner stated the bow had been inserted and removed 16 times, which caused her heart to be punctured 5 times, her lungs 11 times, 9 perforations in her diaphragm, and 9 in her cardiovascular systems. It was also reported that the brutality of this assault left a hole the size of a grown man's fist in her intestines.
And this was from being penetrated from inside her?
Yeah. The bow was inserted so far into Peggy's body that less than 20 inches could be protruding.
Oh, my God.
Peggy was only 5'2". The bow was 5 foot. The top part of the bow could be seen just under the skin above her breasts.
Oh.
A pathologist would later say that this horrific torture probably happened either a few seconds before or a few seconds after she passed. The coroner would later say that Peggy was assaulted with other objects. One was possibly the mop handle of the mop that was laying on her body when she was found, but they never said what the objects were. It was believed to have happened sometime after 9:45 p.m., but that was just an estimate.
On Friday night or Saturday night?
Saturday night, because she was found on Sunday morning.
Okay.
Normal time of death is calculated by the body temperature, and that's usually done rectally. But due to the disfigurement of Peggy's anus, the reading couldn't be judged as accurate. The coroner found that Peggy did not show any signs of vaginal trauma.
Really?
And no spermatozoa was found.
Really?
Spermatozoa, right?
Semen.
No sperm, no semen was found. As for anything missing, as for a robbery or anything, mm-hmm. Mary Alice claimed that a set of rings were gone and meat from the refrigerator was gone. And a few days later, they found Peggy's purse in her bedroom, and money was missing, and so was the key to their apartment. Before we get really further into this, I want to talk about the Reavers and everybody associated with her.
Okay.
Them. So Mary Alice was a waitress, and by all accounts, she was a party girl. Many said that she was a sex worker, but that isn't known for sure. She was never arrested. Right. She never stated to anybody that she was a sex worker. She could have just been living her best life.
Right.
I mean, you know what I mean? But you know how towns mm-hmm. are awful. Small towns are awful, and they will talk.
Mm-hmm.
She could have just been taken a part of the free love counterculture that was happening all across the country at the town. Town gossip said her apartment always had a different man coming in and out at all hours. Which town gossips, you can't.
Yeah.
I hate town gossips. Mary Alice had had the twins, Peggy and Kathy, when she met a man by the name of Herman Reber. They married, and when Mary Alice had the twins, Herman was overseas because he was in the military, and he was going to adopt the girls. He filled out all the adoption papers, and he was planning to adopt them, but they technically were never formally adopted because they never went in before a judge mm-hmm. to court. But Herman helped raise the girls, and he loved them much like they were his own, pretty much. And the marriage lasted 13 years, but dissolved in April of 1967. And Herman remarried in December of 1967, just a couple months later. So newspapers at the time only really got Herman's side of the story, because I got a lot of this on newspapers.com and a lot of it from Philadelphia Weekly and Lebanon Daily News, I think. They pretty much only got Herman's side of the story. They never really talked to Mary Alice. Mary Alice was kind of like the town. They would have put a red A on her.
Okay. The town.
The scarlet column. Letter. Yeah. They were really mean to her, the entire town. It's awful what
sure
they did
they
to her.
Blamed her. But, you know, this would have never happened.
They did.
Yeah.
They did. But the whole thing, the divorce, you know, there's a bunch of sides. People never say what really happened during a divorce, right? He claimed that Mary Alice, that the reason for the divorce was Mary Alice was running around. Well, Mary Alice claimed that Herman was running around. Mm-hmm. And who's to say? It sounds like both were probably running around. But to each their own, whatever. Herman said that he wanted custody of the girls, but the girls wanted to stay with their mother because, well, they got a lot of free. I mean, their mother was gone a lot.
Mm-hmm. Freedom.
Freedom at 14.
Yeah.
You kind of want that, right? You don't want rules. You want to, even though rules and stability is fantastic.
It's really what you need.
Exactly. They didn't want
that. You're a teenager, so therefore you do not want it.
Exactly. So the girls just wanted to stay with the mother, and Herman claimed that Mary Alice had brainwashed the girls against him, but that's probably not really what happened. It was the girls wanted to be with their mother.
Right. Which is pretty, I mean, that's pretty typical.
Right. Art, the second person, was Peggy's boyfriend for a short time. His name was Art Root Jr. He was younger. He was 26.
Oh.
And years before, he was in a work release program in Pennsylvania. He was in jail for stealing a car, I believe. And one day on work release, he just basically left, went to Illinois.
Well, it's called work release. He worked.
I know. He released himself. He gave himself an alias. He got married and he had two kids.
Wow.
He had just recently moved back into the town with his family for a few months.
Moved back into the town that he was released from?
Yeah.
I love people.
Mm-hmm. And, well, I don't think it was that town. Maybe it was a different town.
Any town. Like, he should be hiding.
He shouldn't have been back into Pennsylvania, but he came back to Pennsylvania. Yes. And he had recently moved back into town with his family before he started to date Mary Alice again. And this was a few months before Peggy's death. And he had priors of theft, of course. And he even got in trouble with the law for forging Mary Alice's name on checks and cashing them. That's a boyfriend you want, isn't
right?
it?
The surprise would be on him because I have no money, but okay.
They only dated for a few weeks. It seems that Art's wife told him.
I want you back.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And supposedly, I think there was rumors that she went to Mary Alice's house and had it, or the apartment, and had it out with her. Then there's Kathy, Peggy's twin. She's married to Richard Dick Boyer, 23 years old.
Is Dick in parentheses?
Dick. That's his nickname. Yes. Okay. Not just the fact that he might be one, but he's, they live next door to Mary Alice and had moved out the day before Peggy was found dead. Now, they went to live with Dick's parents, mostly probably to help out with the new baby, because at 14, you're not capable of having and raising a baby. I'm sorry, you're not. I'm almost 50 and I'm not capable of raising a baby.
True dat.
Dick had been married previously, was divorced, and a few months prior to this new baby that he had with Kathy, he had another baby with another woman.
Those girls can pick them. Mm-hmm. Tell you. Okay.
Once Kathy found out that Peggy was dead, she tried to commit suicide with pills, but they...
She's still 14 at this time?
She's still 14. Mm-hmm. She was taken to the hospital and she had her stomach pumped. And later Dick would say that she was an unfit mother and his parents would adopt the baby and raise the little girl on as their own. I will say right now when I'm doing this, there's not a lot of information of the family on newspapers or anything like that. A lot of this information of the family and the insights that I've gotten was from a book called Justice Denied by Michelle Gooden. I've tried many times to contact Michelle because I wanted her to come on and tell her story about this, and she's never gotten back with me. So,
what year was the book published?
Not long ago, like 2000 something.
Okay.
Yeah. So a lot of this information I've gotten from the book. It's a pretty interesting read, by the way. Pick it up if you can. It's on Amazon. Dick had an anger problem, and his brother Ray told the author of the book, Justice Denied, Michelle, that Dick had gotten into car chases with police and then got out of the car and then climbed a tree and threw rocks at the police. Right?
Okay.
And he had such an anger problem that his parents took him to see the doctor, and the doctor's, and that was back then. And the doctor's like, well, that's just him. That's just, yeah. Mm-hmm. Now it would be treated differently. Mm-hmm. So Peggy's boyfriend, Roy, Dick's brother, he was married and had a child and another on the way when he was dating Peggy.
Okay. Those all three are brothers? Rick, Ray, and...
Ray and Dick are brothers. Mm-hmm. Dick was 23. Ray was 19. Mm-hmm. Ray was married with a child and his wife was pregnant, but they were separated, I guess. And he was sleeping on the couch in Mary Alice and Peggy's apartment because he was dating Peggy. Mm-hmm. Dick and Kathy, Peggy's twin, Dick being Ray's brother, mm-hmm. used to live next door, but moved out that Friday to live with Dick's parents so Dick's parents could take care of the baby. Does that make sense?
Totally.
Okay. Ray and Peggy had only been dating for a few months, and it said that he was sleeping on their couch. Mary Alice did say that Peggy and Ray had planned to get married after Ray divorced his wife, and she also said that Ray was good to Peggy, and Mary Alice said that she felt comfortable leaving that night because Ray would protect Peggy with everything he could do. Mm-hmm. And Peggy, she was a ninth grader at Henry Hawk School with over 30 absences from school that year. Said she was very, very shy, and she never really spoke to anybody in the apartment building, but she always greeted people, and she was very smiley and very nice and polite. When I was reading the Lebanon Daily News about this case, they were interviewing neighbors and everything, and this kind of made me ill. One of the tenants said, when they asked, do you know anything about Peggy? He said, well, she did have a nice build. She's 14. You don't be thinking about 14-year-olds like that.
Sure, don't say it out loud.
She's a baby.
A perv.
She's in an interview Mary Alice gave the Lebanon Daily News. She said that Peggy was an average student and she wanted to be a secretary when she grew up, which basically is what everybody, that's all the women wanted to do in the 60s. But after meeting Ray, she changed her mind. But other than that, that's pretty much what the paper reported of her. Poor Peggy was never humanized. They never gave any type of thing about Peggy at all. They never went into her life. And it wasn't until this book that I read with Michelle Gooden's book that actually Peggy was a real person. Mm-hmm. And actually the same with Mary Alice. I'm going to do that now. Most of the news articles of the time focused on Mary Alice and her unconventional lifestyle.
It's spicy. That's what it says.
I know. And all but came out and blamed her for what happened to her daughter. The media made sure to mention that there wasn't any food in the apartment when Peggy was found. Said how she had been in Atlantic City to entertain immigrant men. There was a big Puerto Rican population mm-hmm. up there at the time. Mm-hmm. And she was friends with Puerto Rican men.
Mm-hmm. Going back to that, there was no food in the house. So was there really no food in the house? Or did Mary Alice, remember, she told them some meat was missing?
I don't know.
Do you know what I'm saying? I wonder if she said that to kind of cover herself for not having food in there, or if there was food and it really was stolen.
Well, later it said that Jewel, when she went in to help clean up the apartment after mm-hmm. everything was found, there was rotting meat on the counter. There were flies everywhere because there was a rotting meat. Yeah. Okay. I don't know exactly. It could just be rumors. Mm-hmm. Police told the papers numerous keys of Mary Alice's apartment had been handed out. Numerous keys. They always made numerous keys. Technically, from the book, there was only 6 keys. Mary Alice had one. Peggy had one. Ray, Dick, and the boyfriend, Alan Root Jr. They all had their stuff there. They all would come. Those were the people that you would think would have keys. Right. There wasn't 50 keys handed out. The only one that other would have keys would be the landlord. Mm-hmm. So rumors circulated through the town of Lebanon of how Mary Alice was selling her daughters for sex, that she was using her daughters to prostitute them. Mm-hmm. That's not true.
Mm-hmm. Well, the ones married off already and having babies.
Right. The people in the community, instead of focusing on who killed mm-hmm. Peggy, they mm-hmm. were focusing on Mary Alice. And they were saying, why isn't she facing child abuse charges? Why, you know, why would she should get her for prostitution? Mm-hmm. They didn't even care that there was a killer in the loose in their community. I mean, this poor grieving, I don't care what you do. She lost a child. Yeah, for God's totally. Sakes, where's your compassion, people?
Yeah. Different time, though. And that's, you know, not. But you know what? That'd still go on social media today. That
I know.
Same thing would happen.
I know. But what kills me is the chief detective, the one that's 82 years old, Cliff Robertson, 40 years later, he still was quoted to say that Mary Alice was a bad, bad person. There's nothing to state that she was a bad person. She might not have been a great mother, but she wasn't a bad person.
Mm-hmm.
But people that knew Mary Alice said that even though she might not have been Mother of the Year, she loved her daughters very much. We're going to go back to the scene of the crime. All right, we're back in the apartment. Peggy's body is still covered up with the blanket. The police are there. They're taking photographs. And in an interview, Police Detective Roland said, "So many people were walking around, touching things, moving things, walking in her blood. Peggy's naked body had been covered with a blanket from the bed. It was so confusing." Police took the blanket that had been covering Peggy, mm-hmm. and they took it in for evidence, mm-hmm. and they found hair from different people. And honestly, I'll get to this later, but there was so much hair that to this day, not all of that hair has been tested.
Well, and they lived, you said they lived in an apartment, so I'm going to assume probably the apartment had washer and dryer set, or they went to a laundromat, mm-hmm. I'm assuming. So that,
yeah,
that could have hair of who
plus
knows
plus with
who.
How many people coming in and out of the apartment, if yeah. it said. Mm-hmm. There was one single dye strand of hair that was found on Peggy's thigh. They took a half bottle of beer that was found in the apartment, and when they dusted that for fingerprints, police found a ton of different fingerprints. 11 of those were from the officer who collected the bottle.
What?
And a lot more of those fingerprints were never identified.
How many times did you touch the bottle to pick it up for evidence?
Thank you.
What?
I know. Didn't use gloves, but 1968, did they? I would assume they'd use gloves. I would assume they'd know better.
I watched Columbo, Jen. I got hooked on the show this weekend, mm-hmm. and he would take like a handkerchief, yeah. right? If they didn't yeah. have gloves.
This is the time where, right after my dad worked for the fingerprint department in FBI and
yeah, they knew fingerprints had
Washington
been around for a long time.
Yeah,
by that
I know.
Time.
Since the door was not broken in, the police surmised, got that, Chris? They surmised that Peggy knew the person who killed her, which is obvious. Friends and neighbors said that the Reavers always kept their doors locked and chained. They would hear people knock. Mm-hmm. They'd hear other people say, "Hey, it's Ray," or whatever, yeah. and then they'd lift the chain. One thing they couldn't understand was how the killer was able to torture and mutilate Peggy's body without anybody hearing anything. The walls were thin, and they were so thin that the neighbors could hear everything from anyone's apartment. Police seemed to not find a motive for why someone killed Peggy. Peggy didn't have any enemies. Ray's wife, maybe. But personally, would a woman have the strength to do that with the bow 16 times?
No. And where'd the bow come from? Was the bow from
it was
the house?
In the apartment,
so
because
it
was Ray's.
Ray's bow. Okay.
Because Ray was staying there.
Those are just so, first of all, I don't think that's traditionally the way a woman would kill another person, mm-hmm. right? It's too violent. And then the violence and the sexual. Somebody was like mad mm-hmm. at her.
Or mad
or
at
Mary.
Something.
Yeah.
Maybe robbery, mistaken identity.
Yeah, but you wouldn't do all that.
Mm-mm.
I don't think so.
They didn't know what was going on.
You'd stab her.
Mm-hmm. Peggy also thought she was pregnant at the time of her death. Her mother stated that she might have been pregnant, but it wasn't really anything for sure that she was.
Did the examiner find that to be the case?
It wasn't looked for at the time. They don't think they had the technology. Back then, to test if you were pregnant, they yeah. put your blood into a rabbit, and the rabbit had to die, right?
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Like they,
you would think during an autopsy,
find something.
But if her body was completely mutilated,
well, but then that's also a good point because she was so violated down there. If
you
she
wouldn't
was
have
pregnant,
known. You would have to
the person that killed her got her pregnant and didn't want to deal with that.
Right. It's unsure if she was pregnant at the autopsy. Later, her body would be exhumed. And the body was in such bad shape, like the liner had broke, that her body was pretty bad decomposed. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure if they did find evidence that she was pregnant, it hasn't been released. Mm-hmm. As far as I know, mm-hmm. or as far, I don't think they'd probably tell anybody. I think the police would probably keep that under wraps, wouldn't you think?
Yeah. Well, they boggled it so badly anyway.
Yeah. But it was 1968. And I hate to say that. I hate to make excuses for them, but a lot of it, I think, was because of who Mary Alice was.
Mm-hmm. They didn't care.
Right. Police had a nice list of suspects after 3 days of police work. They had spoken with hundreds of people and had questioned over 50 suspects. 8 of those men gave dental impressions. Suspiciously, 2 people that the police had spoken with committed suicide shortly after.
What was their names?
One was an insurance salesman by the name of Marlon Jones. Marlon was 23 years old, who had fought in the Vietnam War. He gave police a detailed description of a suspicious man that he saw while collecting insurance premiums at the apartments. I guess that was a thing to collect the payments back then in person. So on Friday, June 7th, Marlin shot himself in the head in front of two military officers. Later, it was found that Marlin was embezzling money and also marriage problems. His wife and child were living in Texas at the time. And the FBI was able to finally clear him as a suspect. Seems like instead of turning in those insurance payments,
he collected was keeping them, but never turned them back in.
Pocketed them. That's what I assume anyway. The other suicide also served in Vietnam. His name was Morris Purcell. He was 20 years old and a patient at the VA hospital.
Psych unit?
I think so. Morris was arrested and put into police custody for a burglary warrant shortly after Peggy's murder. He hung himself.
In jail?
Yeah. The police chief investigator, Roland, said it was autoerotic asphyxiation. Roland also claimed that Morris could have been involved, but he would have had to have help.
I think about those two that served in Vietnam and how brutal that could have been for them. They could have post-traumatic stress disorder.
So the district attorney at the time, Alan Davis Jr., sent a letter to all the tenants in the apartment building on June 1st, asking for any information that had seen Peggy anytime that day, that night, that
somebody
weekend
had to see something
of the
whole
murder.
Weekend.
In the letter, he stated, "No arrests have been made and there are no immediate prospects. We need more evidence. The girl's killer may be a sex maniac and will most likely strike again." Lewis included sheets of paper and a self-addressed stamped envelope, a Sazy, if you will, remember from Zoom. Anyone who may not want to come forward out of fear, if they're scared, that they could totally remain anonymous. All they had to do was write it down, send it into the police. A man by the name of Paul Spittler stepped up and told the police he knew who this monster was that killed Peggy. Mm-hmm. He gave a sworn statement to police. At first, things looked great, and the police is like, damn, we got him. We got him good. And then the police started digging deeper into Paul's statement and found that he might have a vendetta against the guy that he claimed did it. And later, Paul admitted that, yes, I
did. Just a little one. Mm-hmm. Just a small one.
So it seemed that Paul Spittler had a little crime thing.
Just a small little problem.
He was going up against the court soon, and he thought that maybe if he would say, hey, I've got information, the court would say, hey, okay, for this information, we're going to be lenient on you. He had been arrested on larceny, forgery, receiving stolen property, and driving on a suspended license. Now, the police added perjury to that list, so he got in trouble for doing that.
Good.
The police didn't really get any leads from the people at the Maple Leaf Apartments or the Heartbreak Hotel Apartments, but they were able to trace some of Peggy's steps leading up to her murder. On Friday, May 24th, right after Mary Alice left, that's when the landlord cut off the electricity to the apartment. Ray and Peggy were in the apartment watching TV. Ray went to his brother's Dick's place. They were in the process of moving. And he borrowed an extension cord so they could borrow electricity to watch the TV and keep a lamp on, right? Mm-hmm. So they were watching TV.
So he left Peggy alone there?
Right, but this was Friday night.
Okay.
Yeah.
They
were watching TV. The landlord cut off the electricity. Ray goes to the brothers next door to get an extension cord, comes back, and they're able to watch TV and with a lamp. Dick was almost finished moving all of his family's possessions from the apartment, and he stopped by another friend in the same apartment building and had a few drinks. And then when he came back to pick up the last of his belongings, he and Ray got into a huge fight. Then, being so angry, Dick took the extension cord out of the wall and left. He took his ball and went home, is basically what happened.
I'm going to take my cord and go home.
Ray and Peggy then left to stay the night with a friend named Chico. The next morning, Peggy's friend Blanche stopped by the apartment to drop off her suitcase.
So it's Saturday morning.
It's the next morning, right?
Okay.
It's about 9:30, I guess, in the morning. And this was Pinky, Blanche's Pinky, the one that was supposed to be, she was going to come stay with him for a little bit. When she got there, when Blanche or Pinky got there, she found Ray, Peggy, and Chico. They were inside the apartment.
Okay.
Later, a man named Jose showed up.
Jose and Chico.
Okay. Told you the Puerto Ricans, big community there at the time. At 1:30, Constable William Kimmel came to arrest Ray on a warrant for not paying child support, which is, okay, weird, because how did he know Ray was there? This was questions brought up in the book. Mm-hmm. How did he know Ray was there, mm-hmm. and why did he do it on the Saturday? Normally, they would go to your work, correct?
I would think so.
After Ray was arrested, everyone left the apartment. Peggy and Blanche went to a comfort station, which is basically a quick trip, maybe? Quick trip or bathroom slash comfort station.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Like a rest area, kind of.
Kind of. But if you know what a comfort station is, please feel free to email us, text us, or whatever you need to do. Let us know. Peggy and Blanche went to the comfort station and then to the cafe where Mary Alice worked as a waitress to see if they could find her, because Mary Alice hadn't come home that night, right? Mm-hmm. Saturday morning, Mary Alice still wasn't home. Peggy confided in Blanche that she was scared to stay alone due to people coming in and out of the apartment who had keys. And now that she didn't have Ray to protect her, she would be all alone and no electricity.
That's scary on its own.
After the cafe, they then headed to the Eat Well restaurant where Blanche worked. Peggy had some food and a soda and left around 4:15. Two of Peggy's friends or acquaintances claimed to have seen her at separate times. One said she saw Peggy at 5:50 walking with her head down and appeared to be depressed, which I would be too if your mother kind of disappeared. Another reported seeing her at 6:15 carrying a purse and a few bags, but she also appeared to be crying. Around 6 p.m., Alex Root said that he had stopped by the apartment to see if Mary Alice was home. Peggy answered the door and said that the landlord had evicted Peggy and Mary Alice and that she was packing up to move.
I find that strange. If that's true, a landlord would go evict a 14-year-old without the mother being home. I would think that would not be right.
Well, maybe he just told her when, but turned off the electricity, or maybe she called. I don't know. It's unclear. We don't know. At 7:45 or 8 p.m., two workers at the comfort station, whatever that is, remembered seeing Peggy with a friend in the building. They remember complimenting Peggy on her hair. Peggy had really long, pretty brown hair. The friend was then picked up by her parents, right? Mm-hmm. And later, the police would admit that they never spoke with this friend. Mm-hmm. From the book that I read, it was said that the dad was angry at the daughter for hanging out with Peggy, or she was supposed to be home at this time. And so the dad picked mm-hmm. the girl up, took her home, and the police at first didn't know who the girl was. Mm-hmm. Then they tracked her down, but they never interviewed the girl. They only spoke with the dad because the dad didn't want the girl involved in this case. Right?
Okay.
Wouldn't you want to help
There's
someone?
There's a lot of people in and out of this little mess.
I know.
Okay, go ahead.
The police are still looking for enough evidence to arrest a killer mm-hmm. or the killer. They had sent off the dental impressions to see if there was any match. There was 8 suspects that were given that. Mm-hmm. And the only 4 that I know that have been stated due to the book were Ray, mm-hmm. Chico, Jose, and Alex. Only one of them comes back being a near match, and it's Ray.
Hmm.
Now, Ray later admitted that he had had sex with Peggy and that he gave her maybe a hickey, but he swears later that he would never have bitten her, especially to the severity where
mm-hmm.
the nipple was almost off. The townspeople automatically went that Ray was the one that bit her during sex. Mm-hmm. But Ray swears to this day that it was maybe a hickey, but he would never have done.
Yeah, there's quite a big difference.
There's
between
a
biting
huge.
Off mm-hmm. and nibbling.
Right. And that information came from the book also. Mm-hmm. 6 months after Peggy's death, the FBI comes back with the results of a scientific test. And that's all it stated was it was a scientific test.
Mm. Okay.
Not sure what it was. That's all the newspaper said. But the fiber and hair found at the scene matched Alex Root Jr. And Alex was taken into custody.
But his teeth did not match.
No. But hair and fiber did.
But he was
at the apartment constantly.
Exactly.
No clue on whether the hair that was found in between mm-hmm. Peggy's legs was ever tested. So he was arrested and taken into custody and charged with the murder of Peggy. The trial started on February 9th, 1970, with a jury of predominantly women. Alex was a pretty good-looking guy. when you think of 19, he had like the duck mm-hmm. appeared, you know, like mm-hmm. John Travolta mm-hmm. during Grease. Like that's kind of what mm-hmm. he reminded me of when I saw pictures of him. And I'll post them somewhere, sometime I'll post them. You know how that goes. It comes out in the trial that Alex Root was seen on the fire escape around 6 p.m. on Saturday, and he was wearing a green suit. Now, Alex admitted that he was at the apartment and that he had had a job interview, and he did wear a green suit that day. He claimed he stopped by to get the money that he had stashed after he robbed a laundromat. He was keeping the money safe at Mary Alice's house until things died down so the police couldn't find the money.
Right.
When he found that Mary Alice wasn't there, he went to grab a drink at a nearby bar. When he returned a bit later, he found the apartment was still vacant, and he went to get a friend across the hall to help him take Mary Alice's stereo for collateral, because he was thinking maybe Mary Alice took the money. So what he was going to do is, I'm going to take the stereo, so that way Mary Alice has to give me the money if she wants her stereo back.
Right.
That's what all good boyfriends do
all
the time.
I think that's totally okay.
Totally okay. Mm-hmm. Girls, if this is happening to you,
we
get the F out.
Yes.
Do not do this. So stupid, isn't it?
She's 14. I just keep thinking she's 14.
Yeah, but Mary Alice is 32. But
it seems to me she's 14 too, maturity-wise.
So the friend stated that Alex's wife had found out about the tryst that he and Mary Alice were having. And she did give Alex an ultimatum, and the wife at one point, I believe I said this, showed up to the Reavers' apartment just a few weeks before the murder. The prosecution went into how fibers and hair belonged to Alex were found on Peggy. But when Mary Alice was on the stand, she testified that the blanket that was used to cover Peggy was actually the blanket that was on Mary Alice's bed. And she admitted that she and Alex did have sex on it. So easily mm-hmm. for him to get hair transfers, right? And Mary Alice also stated that she had had sex with other men on that blanket. And not only, like you said, washing it
in an apartment,
with all these people coming and going.
You could track stuff in from outside.
Thank you. And the defense also states that the dental impression that he gave to the police was not a match. Mm-hmm. On February 19th, 10 days after this trial started, Alex Root Jr. was acquitted. The jury spent less than 2 hours deliberating. And it was said that the evidence testimony of fiber and hair was just too complicated for the jury to understand. Well, later, when Michelle Gooden, the author of Justice Denied, she actually tracked down people that were still alive from this jury
wow.
and called them. And she got one man to speak, and he said that they understood everything. And what really caused the verdict for him to be acquitted, the not guilty verdict, was the fact that too many people had keys to the apartment, and it just gave them reasonable doubt.
Right.
Which,
well, I think the teeth thing would be the right. clincher, literally.
Literally. You would think, but of course, you know, the district attorney and everybody's going, oh, the jury just didn't understand what was going on.
It's not
jury
even that
didn't.
Hard.
It's not.
And it's part of their job to explain it.
Right.
That's the same thing that happened with DNA when DNA was first making its
right.
debut.
To this day, many people in the town of Lebanon believe that Alex Root Jr. was the one that killed Peggy, but we don't know for sure. After he was acquitted, the police just stopped looking. They didn't even bother looking for the killer. In fact, the case is still open, but I don't.
It's very cold.
It's extremely.
Did they lose all the evidence? Like, is any of that stuff still around?
I'll get into this, and I don't even know if they are still working on this case.
Okay.
Let's just put it that way. There's a lot going on here. But even the trial, the district attorney didn't even have the trial transcripts. Like, after it's done, there's supposed to be transcripts of the trial.
Mm-hmm.
There's no transcripts of the trial.
Was there no stenographer there?
I don't know how that worked in 68. You'd think that there's a stenographer.
There was. There had to be.
But supposedly, it was the district attorney's job to get them transcribed in case they wanted to go to trial. So the testimony of all the expert witnesses, everything that they said in the trial is gone. There's no record of it.
To me,
there's no record of it whatsoever.
Maybe there was an inside job here or something. There's not like there's no suspects. This is the opposite. There's too many, which would be better than having no suspects.
Right.
Because you have to weed them out, but at least you have some.
Right.
And so this seems like this should be totally solvable.
You would think so, especially now if there's DNA. Mm-hmm. But if they didn't take DNA back then and they don't have it now.
Well, and they've lost everything. But
her body's decomposed now. Right.
Police and
shoddy police work, and maybe somebody knows something else.
Okay, got it.
So 30 years after Peggy's death, the woman that I spoke about earlier, Michelle Gooden, she decided to write a book about Peggy and the murder. And because she grew up in Lebanon, Pennsylvania, and she was only 5 years old at the time, but she remembers it just stuck in her head somewhere. She remembers watching the TV about it. Her parents would talk about it. It was huge news. I mean, it was so violent. It was huge. But she worked really, her and her friend worked really hard on this investigation. Like, they put heart and soul, and it took her 9 years.
Wow.
And lots of money and traveling. She doesn't live in Lebanon anymore, but she traveled back and forth a lot. So I just want to make sure that we give credit where credit is.
We are crediting her.
Yes, because she worked.
I wonder who her friend is. It's really kind of like Jen and that other person.
Well, she had a name in the book, but I'm not sure if that's the correct name, so I'm not using it. I think the name was Susan.
Okay, I got you. So, but she didn't credit her for the book.
They did a lot of legwork on this, and they uncovered a lot of things that...
Obviously. Everything was just in newspapers. That's like the bare minimum.
Exactly. So I really suggest to go on Amazon. And like I said before, it's called Justice Denied. Justice Denied. So anyway, when Michelle and her friend first started out, they headed to the cemetery where Peggy was buried. Laid to rest, I should say. They found that Peggy's father had paid for the plot. Actually, it was a plot that he had bought in 57. And he interred Peggy in one of those plots. And he also paid for the headstone, which was... I mean, he was his father.
Right.
Shouldn't say that he should have, but
yeah,
technically he was her father in name only, but it was still very sweet. He did love her. And while at the cemetery, when they were looking for the actual plot, they started speaking with some of the workers there. And the workers actually told them that, now listen, this is important.
I'm listening.
That the police had told Mary Alice to leave town after the trial, and that they even drove her to the airport.
Why?
I don't know. And later, when Michelle would speak with Mary Alice, she said that after the murder, townspeople would see her on the street, they would call her names, and they would throw things at her.
I guess the town just didn't want to deal with her, so it was better to just get rid of her and didn't have to deal with anything that would come after all this, like the fallout from people harassing her. You know what I'm saying?
Or somebody wanted to make sure she was out of town. I don't know. Mary Alice also claimed that a police officer came to pick her up to take her to the station for her to be questioned. And then he was very nice to her on the way there. But on the way home, he grabbed her by the hair and tried to push her head under the steering wheel, I guess for maybe a favor.
Ugh.
And she's... didn't report it because, like she said, she's like, who are they going to believe her?
Yeah, they
you know, they're not going to believe her who had this big reputation. Around the same time, Michelle starts this project of looking into Peggy's murder. She learns that a female police officer, the only female police officer in Lebanon, was fired for taking some of Peggy's files home because she was going to start the investigation open. The reason for her getting fired is because they said she compromised the case.
She's a police officer. Doesn't she have the right to look into that?
You would think. The chief of police later clarified why taking the file was so bad. It seems that that was all that was left of the case. A flood had hit the area in 1972 and took out all the evidence. The officer filed a suit, and it turned out that not only did her supervisor say it was okay for her to take the file home, there wasn't a written policy at the time that stated that the files could not be taken home.
I mean, I understand how it would be important to keep the files there and have like a reading room or something.
But
because it is. I mean, you never know. She could have had a car wreck on the way home with the windows down and the files would go all over.
So
I get
British,
it.
Yeah.
But I don't think you would get...
He's a police officer. It's a cold case. It's not cold.
It's okay.
Another thing that Michelle, the author, brings to light is the landlords of these Maple Leaf apartments. There was a rumor stated that he had peep holes into some of these apartments.
I was kind of wondering about that with her being a single female, and I'm guessing she was probably pretty cute. You said she was 32, right? If there was some sort of something, anger that she wouldn't, you know, she entertained all these men maybe, and he was hurt because he wasn't one of them. I don't know. We need to go to Pennsylvania is what I'm saying right now. We just need to hop in the car. We have some questions.
Yes.
We'll be right back.
Some of the people even claim that he was sleeping with tenants for favors, rent maybe. When Michelle interviewed Ray Boyer, Peggy's boyfriend, Ray said that the landlord really liked Peggy, like really liked Peggy.
Like.
So much so that Ray stepped up and told the man to stay clear of her. Mary Alice even told Michelle that the landlord, whom she called a dreadful man, said that she could pay back the rent if she and her daughter would sleep with him.
Ew.
Mary Alice said, no way in hell.
Thank you.
The landlord was never really looked into. Some things that I read said that he was, but he was not one that they took impressions of, as far as I know.
Was he a well-to-do member of the society up there?
He was a prominent lawyer.
So, yes,
in the town.
Had the money and he was thought
and I think,
of
yeah.
highly.
And another interesting fact, barely a year after the murder, for no reason or known to anyone, the landlord's dead now, so we don't know. The landlord had the apartment building razed to the ground.
Really?
Mm-hmm. They couldn't even bring the jury to see the layout of the
was
apartment.
Was it old? Did it need to be?
Didn't say, but it's gone.
Doris think.
Mm-hmm. Another person the police really didn't look heavily into was Dick Boyer. As I stated earlier, Dick had anger issues, and the police knew about it. They had been called out a few days prior to Peggy's death because Dick was allegedly beating Kathy during an argument. This was right after her baby, by the way, or maybe before.
These men in this.
And Kathy terrible. Was wearing the orange dress that Peggy had made in school that was later found on her body. Mm-hmm. She was wearing that dress that night, and Dick tore the dress that she was wearing. And so there was Michelle Gooden has questions about why Peggy was wearing that orange dress. Nobody else saw her in that orange dress that night. And she probably wouldn't have been wearing it because the dress was ripped. Mm-hmm. So it was odd that she had that orange dress
ooh,
on.
Ooh, interesting.
Mm-hmm. Maybe.
Somebody dressed her up. And
dressed her. Because it was only half
twins,
on.
Did you say?
They're not. From the picture I saw, I don't think they're identical.
Okay.
Dick also had access to the apartment. He had a key. And although it said that he passed a polygraph test, there's no document stating that.
Well, maybe
that. And he also never gave a dental impression.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Now, see, that would be a no-brainer.
Yeah. Everybody that had keys.
Everybody that had anything to do with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Michelle tried to look into Alex Roots Jr.'s criminal record. She went to the Lebanon courthouse to get his records, and they were told that his file was retired, meaning that he had died and his file had been destroyed. Funny thing, Michelle later was able to find Alex very much alive.
No.
Mm-hmm. He had legally changed his name, remarried, and
why would he change his name?
Well, he was always in trouble with the law.
Yeah.
Always. And it's not the first time he did it. He changed his
name. His last name's
Root. Root, R-O-O-T.
Okay.
When he released himself and he went to Illinois, he changed his name. They were able to track him down with like all his
aliases.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Do you know his new name?
No, was not mentioned.
Okay.
But she did find him. He remarried. He has two kids. He was living out west, and he's in prison out west. So at the time the book was written, he was still alive. But she could never find crime scene photos or the photos that were used in newspapers or the autopsy report.
She was able
to get any of that.
Was she able to find photos that were, well, I guess they wouldn't even, if they were graphic, they wouldn't have been published.
See, at the time, I probably should have said this earlier too. At the time, the Lebanon Police Department did not have a crime scene photographer on staff. So they called the Lebanon Daily News photographer to take pictures.
So the news didn't have it? The Lebanon newspaper didn't have it?
She could not dig it up. They went and looked everywhere and couldn't find it.
Seems like a lot is missing.
A lot is missing.
Like.
And maybe it's been found in the meantime from when the book was published until now.
I think he probably would have found it maybe. I don't know.
The autopsy report and maybe the crime scene photos, maybe that's only kept for the police to have. Mm-hmm. But you would think with you're able to find everything now on the internet that something would have leaked out by now. So the author, we talked about this earlier, the author tried to get transcripts of the trial, but there wasn't one. All testimonies were completely lost except what was made into the newspapers because there was reporters there.
Quote from it, yeah.
And the DA was convinced that Alex did it. He just never bothered to have it done. So he was so convinced that Alex did it, he didn't bother to have it done. He just, because you couldn't retry him. Mm-hmm. because of or double jeopardy. Yeah. He was acquitted of the murder. Okay. But since the DA was so set on Alex that they just said, well, we're not going to retry anybody else.
I was just going to say they stopped looking.
Right. Michelle even went as far as to, she was working with a police officer from the, a cold case officer who was working on it in his spare time.
Right.
But she set up a tip line for people to, with any information to call in. And God bless her. You know, the crazies come out to be called. Some of the first calls was somebody complaining about Mary Alice's behavior and how she, it was her fault, of course, which come on. Some called to say the lawyer, landlord. Ooh. One even said they saw the landlord in his car that evening. And another told of how when they lived there, the landlord would come pounding on the door at night. And seems that he did that to every single woman that lived there, whether they had kids or not.
Yeah, I don't know about that landlord fella.
One woman called to say that she was working as a hairdresser at the time of Alex Root's trial. She claimed that the wife of one of the lawyers involved with the trial brought in crime scene photos and showed them to whomever wanted to look. Why would she have those? That's probably what happened to them.
Well, yeah, pictures. But who gave them? Like, well, how did she get lawyer. Them?
Yeah. Was he on the... And why would you want to show everybody? I mean, how horrible.
Bragging that you had them, I guess?
I don't know. One of the things I found interesting was a call from a person that claimed to work at an office where the Boyer boys' mother would sometimes come in to help. She was a senior citizen at the time, and this place of employment would hire these senior citizens every so often to come in and do things. Well, that's what she did. And one day, while Mrs. Boyer, I guess that's her name, I don't know if she ever remarried, she was working and the police came in to question her. Now, this woman, they said, was normally very smart, very perky, very with it. When the police asked her, she totally changed and she became like this confused old woman. Said she did a complete 180. Another call that piqued my interest was a man who lived on the second floor apartment building. He entertained male guests the way that Mary Alice did. Which is interesting because in the book, Michelle has a good point. What if Peggy saw someone coming and going from that apartment that she shouldn't have seen? No one would want to be outed in 1968. It would have been pretty much a death sentence.
But, you know, I think there has to be a connection there with the violent death. Like, there's something that's too passionate, the way Peggy died.
It's
like,
anger. There's no sex involved in it.
You would kill the mom, not the kid.
Yeah, it's all anger. There was no sexual
it's just
desire for that. It was just
violent.
Violent anger. I agree.
I don't think that's it.
Another fun fact that someone shared with Michelle was that there were police officers that visited Mary Alice frequently.
That's
when they weren't on official business.
Business.
Which is funny because when she got the list of all the evidence that was taken that night in the apartment, there was a pair of handcuffs.
You were going to say that.
And at the time, you couldn't get handcuffs as easily as
you can today.
Right. So another detective, Kevin Snavely, had started looking into Peggy's murder also, but the police department really didn't support him working on it. He did it after hours. He wasn't given.
He was a police officer too? What year did he start?
He was a detective.
What year was it?
This was when Peggy was doing this in the 2003s.
When Michelle was doing it?
When Michelle was doing this. The department didn't support him. And actually, the chief of police told him that he couldn't videotape any interviews of anybody that he spoke with, which is normal procedure to do, but it wasn't allowed for this case. And at one point, Michelle started making it public that she was researching Peggy's death and she was going public. She was interviewed by the local paper. She had a memorial service for Peggy by Peggy's grave and everybody at the town that supported her to get to find the killer. He kind of got in trouble. Kevin Snavely went to that and the chief of police kind of was after him because he went to that memorial. They started to make fun of him about his girlfriend that lived far away, meaning Michelle. I mean, he was given a hard time. Seeing that she and the detective weren't getting much help from the Lebanon PD, Michelle went to speak to a senator in Pennsylvania. And one of the first things he brought up was, what? How Mary Alice was and her behavior and her reputation.
I mean, I get all that.
And this was...
But
it's, in 2000,
that has nothing to do with the brutal murder of a 14-year-old kid.
No.
I mean, she could be a drug addict and be out on the street and not have even been home. And are they still, I mean, home meaning like doesn't even live there with her daughter? would they still bring that up? You know what I mean?
But this was how many years later? 1968 to 2000s? I mean, come on. Get over the fact that the mother might not have had,
she lived a reckless life, but that doesn't have anything to do with
her daughter's violent death.
Yeah.
Exactly. Oof. It's frustrating. And then after all that, the senator said that there wasn't anything he could do per the Pennsylvania state constitution. What? And I didn't look into it, so I'm just taking Michelle's word for it. So this is at the memorial that I spoke about. Kathy, the Peggy's twin, gave a speech. And part of the speech, she addresses the killer. And I thought this was pretty poignant. Quote, "I know you. I know you well. And at last, you know, I am not the only one who knows you did it and you weren't alone. I've gotten reports that you're already tortured by all of this. Good. Maybe one will talk when he decides he's not afraid of you anymore or finally racked with enough guilt that he can't live with himself anymore. Listen, can you hear me coming? I'm holding on tight to the hounds of hell that are nipping at your heels. And when you slip and fall, I will be waiting. I'm not afraid of monsters anymore. I'm not that terrified, abused child anymore."
Oh.
On March 2008, Kevin Snavely was fired for not destroying evidence that he was in charge of. Not anything that was related to the Reber case. It seems that he was supposed to get rid of a VCR or something like that, and he just took it home.
You get fired for that?
Yeah, but he was fired in 2008 mm-hmm. for this thing that he did in 2005.
Huh.
The chief told Snavely that he was an embarrassment because he went to Peggy Reber's memorial, like I said earlier. He was also accused of giving Michelle information on the case, which is untrue because Michelle received all the info from legwork on her own and through the FIOAs, the Freedom of Information Act,
mm-hmm.
and interviewing everyone that knew Peggy. She hunted everyone down. She interviewed Ray Boyer. She interviewed Herman Reber. She interviewed Mary Alice, who has since passed away. She interviewed the girl that the police never interviewed, but the father did. She, put her heart and soul into this work. When I say she deserves credit for all this, she really did.
So my big question here is, did she say who she thought did it
No.
at the end? She just lets people pick. She doesn't guide
No.
you towards?
No.
Interesting.
You can't really accuse somebody of something without retaliation.
No, but you can say, yeah, you're right. But you could say, it's my opinion.
Right.
I mean, and it is.
But
I find that last line of Kathy's abused child anymore.
Terrified abused child anymore?
Telling, I think, maybe.
So, but Snavely took it to court and he was later reinstated. And unfortunately, he's back to work at the police department.
He still works there?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
I don't think I could.
No.
I know I couldn't.
I would take him to court to get my job back, to quit.
Mm-hmm. So.
Show up the first day and be like, yeah, I quit.
So Michelle was told the only way that they could bring somebody to trial again for Peggy's murder is if they could get the grand jury of Pennsylvania to agree, mm-hmm. Do all this information.
Take it up, yeah.
To take it up with the grand jury. The only way they could do that is if they could get a petition going. So Michelle helps the family gather 2,000 names for the petition that puts pressure on the DA to take the case before the grand jury. So John Ditzler, at the time, was the assistant DA and is now a judge. He also was working hard during all of this, after Snavely was taken off the case, to solve this murder. But in the end, he didn't think that there was strong enough evidence to convict anybody of Peggy's murder, and probably
yeah,
not ever.
They lost everything. I would agree with that. I mean, I think there was. I think they demolished it all.
In an AP article written by Daniel Walmer, which I emailed him through mm-hmm. Twitter, Ditzler said in 2018, "As I sit here today, having spent a considerable amount of time on that case, I have no idea who killed Peggy Reber."
Really?
"Not one person has ever come up with a factual narrative about who killed Peggy Reber and how they know. If I die and go to heaven, that's one of the first questions I want to find out." End quote. So by the last quarter of 2008, a grand jury convened to see if there was enough evidence to indict anyone for the murder.
Mm-hmm.
And District Attorney Dave Arnold told Barbara Miller of Penn Live that a grand jury went through a very thorough investigation. They heard from a large number of expert witnesses, and there were 30 live witnesses and audio taped interviews, as well as reading investigative reports. Michelle was one of those witnesses.
Mm.
And per Michelle, she spent more time on the stand than any of the other witnesses.
Mm.
The grand jury issued a report on their findings in July 2009. The report stated they didn't find probable cause to charge anybody with Peggy's murder. The report then went on to bash Michelle Gooden, Kevin Snavely, and the Lebanon Daily News for spreading conspiracy theories. Well, allegedly spreading conspiracy theories. Michelle, of course, didn't take this comment lightly, and I'm not going to go into it. But like I said, I've invited her to come on the show. Hopefully she will. Mm-hmm. Hopefully she'll talk about it. Keep your fingers crossed. Also, she does go into it quite in detail in her book. Mm-hmm. So if you're interested in reading about it. But the report also stated that the grand jury felt that the case may never be solved. Somebody's going to have to confess on their deathbed.
Yeah, I don't think it can be. I think all the evidence is gone.
So this is also interesting. This town had some problems, I think, with their justice system a bit.
Mm-hmm. A little crooked, a little corrupt.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
The previous October, before Peggy's death, 21-year-old Sandra Herman, her body was brought in to the hospital. Her ex-husband, John, who worked at the hospital, he was an orderly, he shot her because she was jealous.
He was jealous or she was?
He was jealous of her and her dating around and everything like that. He shot her, killed her, and he'd always been jealous. And nobody, one of the articles that I read, said nobody was surprised that the relationship ended with him shooting her, pretty much. But what was surprising was her husband was acquitted for first-degree murder.
How is that even
gave him manslaughter, and it was pretty much because the lawyer portrayed him as mentally unbalanced, and Sandra was a cheating spouse. But this was her ex-husband.
Yeah.
Right? Then a few months after Alex Root was acquitted, the body of a divorcee, Rachel Harris, her body was found discarded along the highway outside of town. Right?
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm waiting for the bomb to drop.
They accused an army officer of her death. He went to trial, but he was acquitted after they determined that Harris had choked performing oral sex on him. But he left her body on the side of the road.
Mm-hmm.
I do not believe they charged him with anything. So there's a problem in that town at that time.
Yes, yes.
And an article I read said that at one point, Johnny Carson ever joked that on TV, that if you wanted to get away with murder, you should do it at Lebanon, Pennsylvania.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
So there was something weird at that town.
Yeah. Well, you know, that it's all that small town politics and, you know, they're all connected in there.
Mm-hmm. Ooh. I think what caught the attention of this case for me was because... not that my mother was Mary Alice. She didn't entertain men.
Mm-hmm.
But when I was younger, I was home by myself a lot because she was dating my stepfather. Mm-hmm. And they would go away for weekends. They would, she'd be out and about.
You could relate with that. And you guys lived in an apartment.
I lived in an apartment. And I wasn't always comfortable living there by myself.
Right.
You know, on the weekends. That's mm-hmm. why I always had somebody over mm-hmm. all the time or stayed at somebody else's house.
Right. I get that. That's so young.
From the time I was 12 on till by the time I got out to my own apartment, 18, I was, 19, yeah.
Yeah.
But I think that's what drew me to the case mm-hmm. and the fact that it just seemed that nobody cared about her because mm-hmm. of her mother. And that kills me.
Well, and it's as if she's a throwaway because of her mother. And at 14, I mean, 14, it was a different age than it is today at 14, but it's still only 14, you know?
She was
still
a baby.
Yeah.
And even though she...
One thing I've learned doing this podcasting, and I knew this before, but it's twofold. Number one is if you have a detective that really wants to find the killer, a really dogged detective, he will get to the bottom mm-hmm. of it. Might take a long time, but he will get there or she will get there. I say that meaning interchangeable, you know. But on the flip side is if there's a case and somebody has enough power, enough money, enough influence...
They will ensure
that it never gets solved.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, you just keep throwing
different
things in there and it makes it too difficult to do. The loss of evidence, the building being demolished, it just goes on and on.
Even today with murders of sex workers, they aren't taken seriously, it seems.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure some are, but it seems the majority are not taken seriously because of their lifestyle.
Yeah.
And that's a shame.
It's their
every
fault.
Person.
They did it. Yeah.
Every person matters. Every life matters. If somebody is out there killing a prostitute, that killer needs to be found mm-hmm. and brought to justice.
Oh, that lifestyle.
That's somebody's daughter.
That.
So that's somebody's son.
Yeah.
But still, that
no,
shouldn't.
I'm saying it lends to that, meaning it makes it harder. Killers know that. It makes it harder to realize who's missing from where, you know, and how long. And it just makes it harder to find who did it.
Well, just because one person deems someone's life is a throwaway life doesn't mean that mm-hmm. that's what it is.
Yeah, I get you.
But it's just
job, lots of research on that one there.
There was lots of research. And like I said, it was
the
all
book
from,
is still available on Amazon?
As far as I just purchased the book not too long ago.
Okay.
And all the information that I found was pretty much only on the Lebanon Daily News, a couple things from Pennsylvania right. Live.
Well,
but otherwise,
we didn't
it wasn't.
Have that 24-hour news cycle like we do today.
I know. Thank you, CNN. But no, it's just, it's really sad how Mary Alice was treated pretty much up until her death.
That happens a lot, though, with women, still today even, but especially then.
Right.
You know, because women were supposed to get married young. Mm-hmm. If you went to college, you went to college to get your MRS degree,
mm-hmm.
meet your boy, and then never work a day in your life and have babies.
Mm-mm.
And that was the thing. So anybody that got divorced, I mean, remember, divorce used to be such a mm-hmm. bad thing. Now it happens all the time.
Mm-hmm. She was living in the apartments where the shady folk live, mm-hmm. supposedly. The fringe of society. She dyed her hair platinum blonde, I think.
No, not platinum blonde.
When she came to trial, she had a new tattoo on her wrist. But,
yeah. You
know, nobody gave her the time of day and nobody respected that she was a grieving mother. Mm-hmm. And just because how she lives her life was not the reason why her daughter.
Terrible. Good stuff, Jen. You want to tell the good people where they can find us?
You can find us on Twitter at Our True Crime Pod. You can find us on our blog at www.ourtruecrimepodcast.com. You can email us at ourtruecrimepodcast@gmail.com. We're on Instagram. We are on Facebook. We're pretty much anywhere. We're very accessible. I tend to answer anybody that talks to me, that wants to talk to me. You can do anything. Send me pictures of your animals or your kids, whatever you want. We'd love to hear from you. And if you guys know what a comfort station is and can describe it better than we can, please.
Maybe that's just
shout out.
Thing back then. We'll see. I don't know.
I know. Steve had to look it up. Wasn't quite for sure. But
anyway, thanks for listening, you guys.
Thank you.
And
we appreciate you very, very much.
See you at the same bat time and the same bat channel next week. So until then, lock your doors
and keep passing by those open windows.
Bye-bye.
Love ya. Let's get back to the beginning. Start at the very beginning. Very fine place to start. All right, sorry.
You know so many useless lyrics to go to every
single
situation.
That's from Sound of Music. That's not
ever.
Useless.
You know what I'm saying.
I know. It's my idiot savant. It's my talent.
Your musical idiot's recall. Savant.
Yes. So 1968 was a very tough year in the United States.
Because I wasn't born yet.
Well, it was just very...
I know.
It was,
I got
the
you.
World was in chaos. So on June 5th, Robert F. Kennedy, Lebanon, Pennsylvania is also famous for its bologna. And let me tell you, it's good bologna. I love it. I've had it. Actually, before you leave, I have a little bit of it upstairs. I want you to taste it.
Did you get that from Steve?
I've never had it before until I married Steve because he's always big on Lebanon bologna.
Bologna?
Lebanon bologna.
B-O-L-O-N-G-A.
It's actually more of a smoky salami.
I used to love bologna as a kid.
This
bologna
is more
sandwiches.
Like salami.
Oh, I loved them.
It's really good.
I haven't had bologna in forever, man.
Well, this is more of a salami. Like I said, very smoky, very, it's good. You'll try it before you leave.
Okay.
It's a Pennsylvania Dutch smoked meat, and it's so delicious. Love it. And it's hard to get around here, but sometimes like Schnucks has it. In the deli section. Mm. So. And in an article published in Philadelphia Weekly, Chief Detective Cliffy Clavin.
I was just going to say, this is a side note, but I listened to old country songs because I got bored with listening to everything. And I listened to Harper Valley PTA. And I like really listened to the words and I was like, dang, it's pretty good. And that's so true. Fitting. Mm-hmm. That's what this reminded me of. Okay, go ahead.
Hold on.
I'm trying really hard not to make dick jokes right now.
I know.
I have all this stuff in my head and I'm keeping my mouth shut.
I don't know how we're getting these flies. I swear to God.
It likes you. I think it's because you're talking, maybe. It's over by
or that
you
I
the
didn't
whole time.
Shower.
Like right there. It's right there. Right
I
there.
I didn't shower this morning, so that could be it too.
Oh, they're swarming around you.
I know. Maybe that's why we got flies. The district attorney at the time was Alice Davis Jr. The district attorney at the time was Alan Davis Jr., and he sent a letter to all the tenants.
Because Alice Davis would be Alice Davis from the Brady Bunch. Wasn't that Alice P. Davis?
Maybe.
Okay, go ahead. No, her name was Alice on the show, right?
That was Alice on the show.
Okay.
I don't know.
Ann B. Davis.
Ann B. Davis.
Okay, go ahead.
Part of the investigation to get, I'm sorry, let's start all this over again. In 1968, no, I'm kidding. Joking. Okay. The district attorney at the time, Alan Davis Sr., Jr., Alice Davis, fuck me. District attorney at the time, Alan Dana. The district attorney at the time, Alan Davis Jr., Alice.
Is it Alice? Yes. Is it Alan?
I don't know.
Deep breath. Start it again.
The end. So the district and, excuse me, demons.
Get out.